guys, today we are going to discuss about creating content strategy by using AI. It's very important today because we can't ignore this tool that was simple to ignore, hard today, impossible tomorrow. And I'm so excited to discuss this topic with Jeff Coyle. How are you?
Hey, how's it going? It's great to be here again.
It's a big pleasure. I got a lot of valuable insights in our first episode that was before ChatGPT. Today, this topic is more hot than ever, and it's hard to ignore AI. I don't know what kind of future will be, because we got news that AI can change humanity from Google employees. I read this news. So, Jeff, before we start, just remind our listeners about yourself, about market news, about business, how you can help others to create the right strategy. That it's a must have today, you know.
No, it's great. It's great to catch up. And yeah, a little bit of background on me. I'm Jeff Coyle. I'm the co-founder of Market Muse. Market Muse is a content intelligence platform really focused on content quality and comprehensiveness. And but we give teams the ability to understand what they should be creating, what they should be updating, and then support them throughout that content process so they can execute successfully. My background, I've been in this space about 25 years, as scary as that sounds. I've been a lead generation, testing, content strategy, paid, organic, product management. I've built multiple search engine platforms, ad servers, everything you can possibly imagine that leads to traffic generating money. I've probably done it. And MarketMuse has been around for about 8 years. We created the first content optimization software product that used AI. And we have actually built a large language model solution over 2 years ago, very similar to GPT. Actually, it was already doing topic expert fine-tuning when building, but it was just so expensive back then. The big thing that's changing right now, like you mentioned, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, is it's democratized. Everybody has access to something, right? And it's so inexpensive. There's just so much. The barrier to entry is going down, but you still have to make great decisions, or else you can put your entire business or website at risk.
Yeah, nice. Love it. Let's talk about quality and AI. It's interesting because most people can tell that AI can't produce quality because it's the best rewriting tool ever. Rewriting, not writing. So if we use prompts, any prompts, we can get content that you can find online. So great grammar, looks great, but it's nothing special, nothing new. And you mentioned about quality. Can you tell how to use AI by creating quality, something new and valuable?
Well, I think you have to think about the entire content process, correct? So even if you produce the most amazing content item, you fact checked it, you analyzed it, you added your own personal story, you put great pictures, it may not have a chance to perform on your website today, right? You may not have that existing breadth of coverage or depth of coverage that it makes sense that you should publish this amazing article. So making great decisions about what you create, understanding who you are today, understanding where you have existing authority, can guide you so that you don't focus tons of money, whether you're generating it with AI or paying for a writer or hiring a new writer. You know, it's the same thing, right? You're trying to figure out how are you investing in things that can have a meaningful return on investment, or at least with the knowledge that you're building a foundation. This is something that you know you want to focus on. There's a lot of articles you need to build, and you're going to get to the end. So I like to think about treating a generation solution like it is a writer you've never met before, right? You've got to keep humans in the loop so that you can get better and better and better at using technology to speed up your process and try to break the old triangle, speed, quality, and performance. And what you want to figure out is ways that you can enhance your skill set. So if you're not a subject matter expert, if you don't know all there is to know about the topics that you're producing content for, you're at risk. So how do you use artificial intelligence? You use it to enhance your process, but you're not going to replace until you have somebody who can evaluate whether it's authentic, whether it's going to be authoritative and high quality, whether it's factually correct, and whether it isn't plagiarized, correct? Because when you're generating content, you mentioned it's a great rewriter, but it's actually a great predictor of text. It's not ever plagiarizing, but what it can produce is derivatives. It can produce something that just smells like it wasn't written by somebody who would have written it if they were an expert. So you've got to still provide that insight so that you don't fall into a problem. You can get it very good. You can get very good, and you can train, you can fine tune these models using your own data, using your own content. You can get it very great. However, you've still got to be providing something that's great. You got to be providing something that's high quality, exhibits expertise, shows authority, or else you're going to fall into problems. I'll give you an example, right? If you have a content, if you have a site and it's all about, you know, networking software, and you publish a great article about, you know, how to play a guitar properly, it doesn't make sense, right? It's not computing. And so you can write the best article ever about that and put it on that networking software site. You know, you would have to be one of the top sites in the world to have that thing produce value. In reality, it's going to cause problems over time. So you've got to be creating thoughtful content strategy and executing successfully. And what we're going to start to see, and I'd be interested in your take on this, is in the coming months, in the coming year, you're going to see that authenticity is the most important thing. So if you make a mistake or you try to fake authenticity and try to say that a real person wrote it, but actually a fake, not a person wrote it, or if you don't disclose these things, if you then make a mistake, you're going to be set, you're going to be put out as an example. And we've seen this happen. We've seen Google do this with product reviews update, for example, right? If you didn't actually do the review, Google is looking for signals that you did not. So what Google's on the, they're not on the journey of destroying AI. They're not on the journey of destroying generated content. They're on the journey of destroying inauthentic content that doesn't exhibit expertise, doesn't exhibit experience. And think about that product reviews update, stock imagery. The content you wrote didn't tell the story that you actually reviewed it, right? Yeah. So you had your top six dog foods for big dogs, right? And you have stock images. The data that you produce, they could have been written by anyone researching the web, you know, versus someone who has a picture of them with their big dog and they're eating the food and they're actually describing it like somebody. Guess what? That's the future of all content. All content will be vetted. All content will be evaluated to determine, is it authentic or is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice, valuable. I agree with that. Once mm-hmm. I got a copy from a copywriter who wrote reviews about 5 best Forex platforms. And mm-hmm. after reading this copy, I got the feeling he didn't register on these platforms. He just rewrote existing content. And I asked, I don't feel that you registered. And he replied, yes, I did it. I need to do it. Of course. How you can review if you never register on these platforms? Yeah.
Well, and you got to realize that it only takes one mistake to destroy the site.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So if I wrote an article about the best Forex platforms, I love your example, by the way, because that influences how people make decisions with their money, right? In my dog food example, what if I said that a dog food that was good for a big dog wasn't good for a big dog, right? It actually would hurt them, right? So, you know, whether it's the best recipe, whether it's, you know, guitar music, what if you got guitar music and you picked up a guitar and played it was the wrong song, right? You know, mm-hmm. that hurts your site. Is it an immediate pain? Is it a PR disaster? Does it put your business at risk? Does it put your client's business at risk? Those are all the questions that people need to ask. You see a lot of people and they're like, I published 1 million pages and I got $1 billion, right? Yeah, those sites aren't going to be around very much longer. I found a site the other day, it had 2.5 million pages and it had gone from 0 to about 1 million organic entrances a month. All the content was fake. All the content was garbage and actually wrong. I'm like, it's still working, but it will only work for a small amount of time. And it's not business appropriate, right? It's not something that you could legitimize, right? You can learn from stuff like that, but not, you can't actually learn that much. You can only learn a little bit. So just keep your eyes on the real prize, which is improving speed, improving quality, getting more done, and building things that you wouldn't have been able to build before. If you do that, you're going to win. And that's the key.
Nice. Yeah. I usually tell my writers, it's better screenshot, real screenshot, than stock pictures. I don't care about quality of the stock pictures because everyone can get access to these pictures. It's better to leave screenshot that can help users, you know, a real screenshot. And I love all these examples. And I want to ask you about creativity. You know, I see when content creators complain that AI is not creative. And for me, it's very important to be creative at any type of content that you create. For example, I remember a story about Lloyd Richardson. You know, it's interesting about the story. This book author published a book 11 years ago, and he wrote this book for 14 years, but sales, marketing couldn't help to sell this book. Then his daughter posted content on Amazon about this book from account with zero followers, and this video became viral. I watched this video, of course. Nothing special, not the best design, not the best pictures, just simple design, but that was creative, interesting, you know, and I got curiosity, the feeling that I need to read this book. And today this book is bestseller on Amazon. So can you tell how to use AI to be creative? Because it's important to be creative, you know, to share something new, unique way of consuming content.
Well, the thing is, the democratization of AI has been in the form of being able to get a free access to one language model, right? Mm-hmm. A large language model, by definition, isn't creative, right? You can use various forms of AI to inspire creativity, right? What would that mean? It would mean if you did not have access to this software, you would never have come up with that idea, right? Mm-hmm. So it comes into learning how to use the software, right? It's learning how to use things and understanding why it was built, because there might be artificial intelligence software out there or implementations that fit with your view of what creativity is. I'll use a great example here. There is computer vision technology, right? That would take a picture and try to tell you what it is. Doesn't seem very creative. It's solving a business problem. However, taking a prompt and creating possible pictures, people associate creativity a lot easier with their brain when there's a form shift. So it goes from words to pictures, right?
Yeah.
It seems like that's more creative than I input a request and get text back. It feels less creative, but it's this. It can technically be the same level of creativity. You know, it's all in how you slice and dice it. So, what I would recommend is, what is the output you're looking for? How would you define creative? That's key. Start at the end. I would not have produced this content item if I did not use these tools. That's the definition of creativity. I'll give you a great example from Washington Post, okay? Washington Post in seven years ago, implemented a natural language generation platform that they built internally called Heliograph. One of the reasons why they built that platform was because during the Olympics and during elections, their editors were only able to cover a small percentage of the events. And they felt, for example, it wasn't fair to all the other events, right? That's a really good business case. If you're a reporter, if you're playing badminton, you want coverage of who won the event just as much as you might with gymnastics or track and field. So they created a solution that allowed them to report a meets minimum for every sport, right? That's awesome. They have coverage on their site for every sport. They found out it's a little bit harder than it sounds. You can't do it with just rules. Why? There's sports like judo that have two bronze medals. You have to programmatically solve that problem with AI, right? Okay. So now what did their writers get to do? They got to be more creative for the sports that they did cover and feature, because they didn't have to do the baseline work of just showing and saying who won, right? So sometimes unlocking the baseline can open up grounds to do more of the work you want, right? So if you didn't have to do keyword research, how much more content would you write? If you were confident in that keyword research, right? If you would get insights, let's say your content briefs were already built and you were confident in them, how much more writing output would you produce, right? So what you got to do is save the time section by section. So go through a process inventory. How much time do you waste?
Yeah.
I want you to be able to have more time to be creative and then use the software to try to give you, to inspire you to be more creative too. I can bet you, and anyone wants to challenge me, jeff@marketmuse.com, that I can give you a content idea from analyzing your existing site that you wouldn't have thought of. And I can do that with software, right? And if I would have thought of that and you consider it a legitimate idea, that's the definition of creativity, because you wouldn't have gotten there without it. And I think that what people get tied up on is the perception of something being derivative as being not creative, right? And you are the thing that changes something from derivative into authentic, right? So I take a keyword list out of SEMrush, out of Ahrefs, out of MarketMuse, and what do I do with it? I come up with a title tag. I come up with a outline manually out of my brain. Okay. What if the writer reads that and they say, oh, this sounds derivative? That's the same outcome. All right. So you doing the work manually doesn't make it special. That's the key. You doing your work manually probably means that you're inefficiently operating. And what you need to be doing is realizing just because it came out of your brain doesn't make it great. But if you take a great resource package and use your time to be creative instead of using your time being, you know, infrastructure building or basics, you're going to end up being more creative. And that's exciting. And think about that. The features writer for Washington Post never has to write an article about who won the event. They can focus all their time on special interest stories, on their experience. And what if they launch 5 articles during the Olympics that they wouldn't have before? That's good use of their time. That's when you get the person who publishes that creative marketing campaign that attracts users to view all the pages that they created in the first place. You got to get people doing the stuff that they love, not the stuff that they hate. And most of the time, the things people hate are manual tasks that aren't creative.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Love it. I want to ask you about using keyword research. You mentioned a few times about Ahrefs, SEMrush, MarketMuse, and you gave this example about how to play guitar. By the way, I tried. I spent so much time and got it. It's not for me. and it's not like even if I read 100 articles how to play guitar, it doesn't help because it's more practice. You know, I need to do it, to implement. So, but my question is how to find the right keywords? Because I see when webmasters see high volume keywords, they can feel it. Wow, a lot of traffic. I want to get them. But in the first stage, it's hard. It's really hard. For example, if I take the keyword SEO, I need to compete with Moz, Uber Suggest, I don't know, Ahrefs, SEMrush, many great websites in the top 10. And in the second, it doesn't mean even if I find resources to overcome some of them, it doesn't mean that I can sell. SEO services by having this keyword in the top 10. Can you tell how to find keywords that can help to sell products? Even more, let me share one example. Once I spoke with a webmaster who told me he lost 400,000 traffic because Google dropped some ranking positions on his website, but he didn't lose any sales. So he got a lot of traffic, huge traffic, but this traffic didn't sell, didn't convert. So any tips how to find the right keywords according to business preferences?
Sure thing. So whether it's a sock or it's a $500,000 software package, there's a buyer journey. And your content needs to speak to that entire journey. And sometimes marketers, they get tied up on the bottom of the funnel. They want to create the page, that the person comes to the page, and then they buy the thing, right? It's not enough. You don't deserve to be there at the bottom of the funnel unless you're there at the top of the funnel, right? And you don't want to forget about post-purchase implementation, post-purchase ownership, troubleshooting, problems, right? And what about the content for people who own your product already and you want them to make a second purchase or refer, right? What's the stuff they want to read? So for every topic, for every keyword, you've got to associate that to the entire, where does it fit in the, is it explicitly part of that process, or is there ambiguity across that journey? And you need to build the entire package of content that tells the story that you actually understand the user, you understand the buyer, okay? Because that builds. Imagine, so there's some concepts here that I won't get into. The your frame on this looks kind of like a vector graph. So I'm thinking about vectors, right? So if you imagine that all the words that exist on a site that tells the story that they know exactly everything there is to know about a concept, right? They're represented by concepts. And if somebody really knew everything, they would have all of these concepts covered. Right? They may have them covered for beginners, for intermediate people, for experts, middle of the funnel, bottom of the funnel, troubleshooting, right? Now, how does that compare to your site? Right? You don't have this. You don't have any early stage awareness content. You don't have any middle of the funnel. You don't have any comparison content. You don't have any troubleshooting content. First of all, from a marketing perspective, where are they going to find that information? They're going to a publisher, they're going to Wikipedia. They're going to a forum, you're going to Reddit to find all this information. Why aren't you publishing that content? Whether it's unbranded or branded, you got to publish that content. So how do you find keywords, right? You know the concept that you want to own, and you know the whole buyer journey. You know what industries you need to focus on. You know what target users you need to focus on. And only then can you understand how much content you need to create or update in order to have a meaningful impact on the business, right? So let's look at traditional keyword research and why that doesn't measure up. You look at the old four square, right? You've got volume, you've got generic difficulty, you've got the low volume, high cost, high volume, low cost. What it doesn't tell is it doesn't tell where you are today, who you are, how much breadth and depth of coverage you have, and how you can win. So the key to keyword research is not just the word, it's where the word lives in the space, and it's how much existing authority do you already have. And then you can make decisions about what you need to do. If you think it's about one word and one page, one word equals one page, I'm sorry. Rethink that. We've got to build out a strategy that says, if I were an expert, and I were covering this concept comprehensively, what would this page look like? And what are all the pages that I would build to support this page? I know people talk about that as clusters. It's an easy way to mentally structure it. But what you're really trying to do is put yourself in the situation where you could confidently say, if I were going to make someone buy this pair of socks, right? Mm-hmm. Right? What's the first question you ask, right? Who's it for, right? How much, what kind of purchase decision is it? How would I make the decision to buy those pair of socks, right? How does it compare? I'm walking up the funnel, right? What are its special features and benefits? Why do people need socks in the first place, right? Why does this type of person need socks? What other types of foot coverings does this person have? I'm drawing the funnel this way. Now I bought them, right? How do I coordinate the look of this sock? How does it wear? How do I maintain it? What if it gets a hole in it? Like, you see what I'm saying? If I really knew this entire journey, what wouldn't my content item be? It wouldn't be a general guide to socks, and it wouldn't be something that's related to how much this thing costs. And a lot of times marketers are only thinking about themselves, and they're not thinking about the user, and they're not thinking about the content package that tells the story that they understand the user. That's how you do keyword research. It has nothing to do with the keywords. It has to do with the content strategy that supports the buyer journey all the way through until they recommend to their friend to buy this pair of socks because it fits really well.
Mm-hmm. Nice, nice. I have two questions left. And, I often check out tools before trying. For example, I read reviews, and I found that people often compare Market Muse with Phrase and Surfer SEO. Mm-hmm. I think all tools have their advantages, disadvantages. Can you tell what kind of advantages Market Muse has compared to these two tools and even ChatGPT that we can use for $20 a month?
Mm-hmm. So great example there with the GPT 3.5 mm-hmm. Turbo or GPT 4. If you have OpenAI API access, which is not the ChatGPT Plus, but you have OpenAI platform, you can actually hook your OpenAI API right into Market Muse. So simple integration if you have an account. So you can actually get the best of both worlds while using this technology. I don't know why anyone would pay for something more when you can use OpenAI's API for pennies, and it can give you all the value of hundreds of dollars solutions. That's something that you can do right now on any paying Market Muse plan. You can hook it right in. The unique differentiator for Market Muse is we actually provide site level analysis using your data, and we personalize metrics for difficulty. We're the only platform that has a metric for topical authority. As people on Twitter like to point out, I was one of the first people talking about topical authority in 2005 to 2008. Yeah, there's a lot of people who say that they invented it 2 years ago. But we have a metric for it in our platform that gives you a fair and reasonable estimate of your competitive advantage. Okay, Surfer and Phrase, they're not thinking about it at the site level. Good. They should be, right? And they're going to, right? They have great software. These are great software packages, brilliant people involved. They're heavily focused on page level optimization or rushing to the end of creation, right? I only want you to create the item if it's going to be the best page in the world. I do not want you over optimizing a page. If you go in and use one of those technologies, because the source of the data is derivative by its general nature, what it's doing is it's looking at the top 10 pages in organic search and it's showing you co-occurrence, right? So there's a concept called correlation SEO, right? That's not what Market Muse does. Market Muse evaluates what it means to be an expert on something, and it also shows you the competition. So if I know what it means to be beautiful, and then I know what everybody else is doing, I can then draw great conclusions and make great decisions. I can't make those same decisions if I only know what everybody else is doing. That's the big difference. If you want to copy your competitors and that's it, there's a $9 solution that's better. You might as well use our free solution. We have a free solution that's more comprehensive and is more capable than those paid solutions, right? Why would you use something that just tells you how to copy others when those are commodities right now? So if you want something that's giving you insights onto what it means to be an expert, that's the unique differentiated advantage. But those solutions keep getting better and better. Everyone you've named and everyone you didn't name, they keep getting better and better. we're focused on content strategy as well as execution. We're not just focused on optimizing. If you're just focused on optimizing, you know, there are challenges that come into place. I really dislike it when people over-optimize content. And I mean, it's such a self-defeating process. And what I find is, with the spirit of making everyone feel like they can optimize everything to be perfect, that's not how Market Muse has ever operated. You shouldn't have 50,000 word blog posts, you know, about some of this stuff. Let's be pragmatic. You know, we're not a spinner, you know, you shouldn't be spinning at all. And that those things really differentiate. I like to say that we're business responsible optimization.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I often get requests from my clients, please add 100 keywords to this page. I don't know how to do it. You know, it's not for a human being. It's it's an obsolete technique, you know, if you are talking about Google. And my last question about Geoffrey Hinton, a Google employee who left the company to say about AI that is dangerous for our world, for our society. Because it's interesting, I spoke with a few data scientists in Zurich University, and they told me AI is stupid. AI can't be dangerous for a human being. But Elon Musk told before, then it's interesting that when he changed the mind and bought all this equipment for Twitter to pay attention to AI, Mark Zuckerberg in the last presentation mentioned AI on this presentation around 40 times. 40 times he talked about AI. Elon Musk said, okay, AI can be dangerous, but he invested a lot of money to improve AI on Twitter. Can you tell your prediction? What kind of future will be in AI? Is it possible that we have scenario like from Terminator or Matrix or something else? Or human can control this machine? What do you think?
Is it possible? Absolutely. It's, I mean, I can speak about this for about hundreds of hours. However, what the three things that I will comment on is that the first one is if-then statements, so business logic. There's no place in business for business logic right now. If you have if-then statements inside your business, make a note of them. They are obsolete. All knowledge, all evaluation of business logic can be done with AI in a far superior way than any if-then qualifier. So we're already there. Google example, I love your example. I have lots and lots and lots of friends at Google or ex-employees of Google. If you are at Google and you do not believe the future is artificial general intelligence, it's not a good place to work. Almost everyone there believes in that as the future. We will see that in not just our lifetimes, but in the next calendar year to 18 months in commercialized form. Absolutely. There's already specific artificial intelligence models and software platforms for complex mathematics, for video production, for, you know, all of these things already exist. It's just not the thing you have access to with ChatGPT. So you gotta make sure, you know, that's not even remotely close to everything. Could we be in a situation where artificial general intelligence does things we can't possibly imagine? Absolutely. We are already in a situation where entire industries are at risk. Entire MarTech industries, entire SaaS software industries, entire jobs, job types are close to obsolete or will be obsolete. Basically, in the future, we'll have three types of companies. AI native, they were built with the understanding that artificial intelligence needs to power everything we do. We'll have AI emergent, where we're in that migration phase, but we have believed it. And then we'll have obsolete. If you're in a company that has any manual processes, or you're making decisions based on business logic, those processes are going to be obsolete in the future. And from my knowledge of Google employees that still work there, the dream of general intelligence is real. It has unified their teams together. So all the fears that Jeffrey Hinton posts are easily valid, can be easily validated. And what we're going to start to see are use cases that blow everyone's mind. It's what you'll have access to will be pennies, and these are going to be dollars, unfortunately, for the general populace, because the perception right now in the market and in the world is that ChatGPT equals AI. They are not synonyms. Yeah. You know, AI has 80 to 100 branches. There are so many different use cases and applications. What you're going to start to see is the entire collapses of industries that do not migrate. And it's going to be blamed on AI. So there's going to then be recourse and backlash. But the reality is, it's just those businesses aren't in that migration processes, and then process, and then over time, that will then make good. It's just like with any path for the world to transition from one belief to another. But yeah, if you're building a new business right now and it's not AI native, I don't know what you're doing. It's completely insane.
Yeah, thank you.
Feel free to quote that last one.
Yeah, that's why I unite my soft with AI right now. We are working on that, so we'll see how it works. Jeff, it's a big pleasure to get on the show, to learn from you. You always share a lot of value. I love it. It's enjoyable. Thanks. Say our audience the best way how to keep learning from you, how to follow you, how to reach out to you.
Absolutely. So read the MarketMeas blog. You know, certainly buy MarketMeas. That's why we're all here, right? There's some good deals on our standard offering on the site, or jeff@marketmuse.com. If you have a team larger than three working on content, that's what you want to do. You get the best fit. And we have a webinar series that we run, you know, every other week or every month, depending on time of year, and go check that out. And then I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn. I answer everything, respond to everything. I love this stuff. So.
Nice. Guys, you can find all links to the MarketMuse website, to LinkedIn account of Jeff in the description below. Listen us on Apple, Google, Spotify. Thanks again for your time. Love it. So valuable, guys. You need to follow Jeff because you can see a lot of value. Okay, love you. See you.